Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the first day of September. Chris Rose is our guest this hour. Chris is a columnist for the Times-Picayune in New Orleans. He first came to our attention right after Hurricane Katrina. He wrote moving accounts of what was happening to the city he loves and to the people in that city. We spoke with him then, and we've kept in touch with him these past 4 years. As you know, August 29, Saturday, was the fourth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and we will ask the question this hour, how are things in New Orleans? Chris is also author of One Dead in Attic, which is a moving collection of stories that look at the first few months of life in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and he has been awarded for his commentary, finalist for a Pulitzer Prize for Distinguished Commentary in 2006 and winning a Pulitzer for his contributions to the Times-Picayune's Public Service Award. You can go to Times-Picayune and read many of his columns, his previous work, and a wonderful column that he wrote just this past Saturday on the fourth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Chris, and we should say that he, of course, has Wisconsin connections, having a graduated journalism degree from UW-Madison in 1982. Here's our phone number for you to join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Should you care to send us an email, you can do that, and that address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Chris. Long time since we've spoken with you, and thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning. That last qualifier on my biography was certainly the most important part, it seems to me.
Of course it is.
I was just spent part of the summer up in Marinette County with my children, teaching them about camping in the woods.
All right. Nothing like Wisconsin, except for New Orleans, right?
That's true.
Yeah. So what's the state of the city, Chris? Are things rebuilt? Do they feel like they're moving along swimmingly, or substantial problems still?
I think what it's come to is this. The demographers seem to differ as to whether we're back at 70% residents from before the storm or 90%, and then sometimes the difference is drawn between whether you mean the metro area or the city itself. What it is, if you drive around the city, you can surely see patches, areas and neighborhoods that are missing a lot of folks and a lot of buildings. But I think that's pretty much the way it's going to be. I'm not the expert on rebuilding here, but we've thrown around a term for the past couple of years that we call the New Orleans, mm-hmm. which is the city that we'll have after we shake out the crisis and look around and see what we've got. And I think that's what it is. I think if you drive around New Orleans now, I think this is what we've got and what it's going to be like now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for much of the stretch is the French Quarter, the Garden District, and Uptown, which are really the three areas that, unless you're here to do service work, are the only areas that the tourists and visitors generally see. You can go up and down those stretches for weeks, even months on end, as people who even live here do, and see no manifestations of the storm whatsoever. Just a lot of the outlying and lower areas have, you know, by necessity and had a much slower rebuild, and it's clear some folks aren't coming back.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about the makeup of those who were there and those who are left. I think I heard something in the last week that those who tend to have money have returned in greater numbers than those who didn't have much money. Is that true?
Well, if that were true, it sounds like what you'd be saying is that we're a more affluent community than we were before. I don't see any evidence of that.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know where that came from. Obviously, those who had money got back faster because they might not have had to wait for insurance settlements or road home help or federal help. But I don't get any impression at all that we are a wealthier city or that somehow it all has shaken out, that we've lost the part of the population we've lost would be the more indigent. In fact, the more affluent are obviously also those who are more able to go to another city. to go somewhere else. They have much more mobility as far as job capabilities and the ability to absorb the cost.
Mm-hmm. And what about the ability to rebuild a house, sometimes from scratch, sometimes being able to rehabilitate your house? Have people had access, Chris, to loans to do that? I know that was a mess some time ago.
It was, and as far as I can tell, even continues to a degree to be a mess. Several federal and state programs were set up to do that. Naturally, once government puts its mind to doing something, problems will arise. I think in these cases, less with what you might think corruption, and more with incompetence and bureaucracy. A lot of people have had a lot of frustrations with it. Again, we're veering off to an area that's not much of my expertise, but there's been a lot of programs here. The Road Home was the big state program that people were able to tap into. We've had a heck of a lot of volunteer work. I can't tell you how many houses Habitat for Humanity and organizations like that have built here, but a lot. There continues to be a lot of new building, rehabilitating older places, and there's a lot of teardowns going on, areas that soaked in the storm for a long, long time, and it just doesn't appear that they're ever going to be made viable again.
I was driving into work this morning and heard a story, which maybe you heard too, from NPR, a Florida contractor hired by the Housing Authority of New Orleans to oversee its finances, embezzling more than $900,000 during the past 3 years.
Yeah, and I've just heard a little bit about that. It sounds like the guy was none too discreet about it. He's got, a new Lamborghini and a new million-dollar McMansion somewhere.
No.
Unfortunately, and that's turned out not to be just a Louisiana enterprise, although we're probably better at it here. This guy was from Florida, of course, but, you know, a disaster, I have learned, it flushes out the greatest in human nature and also the lowest.
Yeah, exactly.
We have over 4 years witnessed just the most depraved kind of tricksterism and corruption and stealing folks, everything from, you know, contractors not paying their employees who don't speak English and disappearing, and just lots of guys who took money up front on some jobs and disappeared. But if in those cases, obviously, just like this one, in those cases, those guys aren't from here because they wouldn't be able to stay here if they did that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm sure Galveston's going through the same process right now, and San Francisco went through the same thing in 1906. I don't think that part of human nature is anything new.
The Little Lily That Could, you wrote a lovely column on Saturday about the fleur-de-lis and asked us all to consider the fleur-de-lis. Why should we consider the fleur-de-lis? What's its significance in New Orleans, Chris?
Well, I think what I was asking Mocha readers was to consider the economic value of the fleur-de-lis, what I call fleur-de-nomics. It's a phenomenon that existed before Katrina to a small degree, and that is the city of New Orleans. Self-love is a well-noted characteristic of this city. It's probably one of our annoying and cloying characteristics, but I think it's also one of those things that speaks of unity here and in. One of our charms that keeps us parochial enough to be different from other places. And I know that particularly at anniversary times, people get tired of us in New Orleans crowing that we're America's most interesting city and that we need help to be saved. And people get annoyed at that, particularly, I'm sure, in places like, San Francisco and Cleveland and Chicago, which would like to be special. But the fact is we are America's most interesting city, so we ask that everybody else just get over it. And the fleur-de-lis has manifested itself in the past couple years as something less than a quaint adornment and the symbol of our football team on their helmets to the ubiquitous a symbol of pride and rebirth and rebuilding in New Orleans. Almost everybody. You'd be hard-pressed to look around and find somebody who hasn't tagged either their automobile, their home, their clothing, or themselves with the fleur-de-lis. As I noted in that story, they account for 50% of the tattoo business in the New Orleans.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Woo.
And, you know, it's an odd economy that springs up in the wake of this natural disaster. The tattoo business is doing great, but the fleur-de-lis, along with several other symbols and sayings in town, have become less hometown slogans than really defiant mantras, I think. And it's so widespread that I was just trying to figure out what the economics of all that might be, because most of that stuff is made here, all the jewelry and clothing and various textiles and tchotchkes and the tattoos would be included. It's all made here and sold here to us, and we buy it to mark ourselves with the stamp. And I thought, A, it's a very tribal phenomenon, mm-hmm. and B, it's also its own economy. The money that changes hands on a daily basis with this stuff is really quite significant. It's quite significant in our economy.
Well, let me give you a few moments, as long as you've described it as America's most interesting city. Tell me why.
Oh, well, I don't think anybody's ever challenged that before. You're just supposed to nod knowingly and say, yes, I know, I've been there. I think, you know, simply by age gives us an advantage over a lot of other communities. The amount of cultural, social, musical, and literary history that has emanated from this city certainly tends to beat hands down any other place, if for no other reason than we've been around for so darn long. Heck, my newspaper has been around longer than most cities have, and among the early writers at the paper were Samuel Clemens and William Faulkner and O. Henry, and it just shows you you know, the kind of place it's been. We've attracted the great writers and musicians of all time here. And I can actually, and this is true, a lot of people don't believe this, and I'm not going to be able to cite all the resources referenced for this. You're just going to have to go Google or Wikipedia. But I'll tell you several things that were either invented in New Orleans or introduced into American culture in New Orleans, and those things would be poker, not hard to believe. The concept of brunch began in New Orleans.
Really?
Yes. Huh. And dental floss was invented here.
No.
Yes, indeed.
I love dental floss.
Now that makes complete sense when you think about the way we eat. So, and it's the hometown of Richard Simmons. So after I said all that, how could you not say that we're America's most interesting city?
You know, my mom once won a 3-week trip on the Caribbean with Richard Simmons. Mom and Dad spent 3 weeks on a boat with Richard Simmons. It was the highlight of their lives.
Yeah,
they had a good time. Good time.
I think what it is, what I tell people when they come down here, it's sort of the highlight, the sort of place that they're coming to. And any of your listeners who've been here would know this. I often tell people when they say, well, what do I need to bring? I said, bring your passport. You're not in America anymore.
Let's welcome phone calls for Chris. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. We've talked with Chris intermittently over the past 4 years. He wrote so movingly about New Orleans following Hurricane Katrina, and he obviously has a very, very deep love for the city. He also loves Wisconsin, as you heard him say early on, and studied at UW-Madison. Some of you I know over the years when we've talked with you have left New Orleans to settle somewhere else because you had to. Some of you we've heard from went down to help build houses with Habitat for Humanity. We had people who have called in who were just driving their trucks down with no destination other than New Orleans to see how they could help, just went down to help. We're interested in hearing from all of you. And I'm sure many of you have questions about the state of New Orleans today. Will the levees continue to hold? What about wetland restoration? Has that happened? Somebody I was listening to a show yesterday said that the president hasn't paid enough attention to New Orleans and suggested that he should have gone to New Orleans for the family vacation instead of Martha's Vineyard. Is it still on the radar screen of this new administration? We welcome your phone calls, and we'll take them in just one moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After 10 o'clock, we've been doing, as you know, a whole series of programs on healthcare, looking particularly at how other countries are delivering healthcare to their citizens. We had hoped to have Wendell Potter with us. He's been much requested by our listeners. He worked for a major health insurance corporation for a number of years and then quit after he saw a health fair in Tennessee and found thousands of people being treated in horse stalls. Wendell couldn't be with us. We got a last-minute cancellation, so he will be with us at some other time. Don't worry, those of you who have recommended him. Helen Ann Halpin will join us from University of California, Berkeley School of Health. And we'll try to make sense of all that's on the table right now. What's going on in the House with this? What's going on in the Senate? What's going on with the administration on this issue as well? She knows this issue inside out. All right, let's go to phone calls for Chris. Beth from Broadhead is our first caller. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I just wanted to let him know that I was one of the 37,000 with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America youth gathering in July.
Oh, yeah. You guys really helped us out. That's kind of a slow tourism period, so to have 37,000 people come down was very helpful.
The people were so gracious. I mean, people would hang their head out the window and say, thank you for coming, and, you know, the shop owners. It was just like, and they were so sad to see us go, and we took seven teenagers from our church, and it was just an experience that, I mean, we'll never, ever forget. It was wonderful.
Yeah, well, I think if one thing we've learned, we tend, this is always a place of Southern hospitality, but now we tend to overdo it. We're so grateful.
Oh,
so grateful,
yes,
for the help that we've received from people around the country. And it's very hard to express it on a large level. We, you know, in most cases, like you came down, you did service work for us, and you moved on not really expecting much more than maybe a thank you, and sometimes that's all we can give. We don't know where everybody is. There are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people across this country who have come here and rolled up their sleeves and done the great work that in many cases, you know, government, corporate America have faltered on, and the truth is we'd be nowhere without it. We would be lost without the help received. So, and I think everybody here is really dialed into that, and people will just jump out of the car and shout thank you and hug you for no reason.
Yeah, there was just waitresses, waiters, it was anybody would just come up to us. We have this youth gathering every 3 years. It's always in a different city, and we're hoping that we'll go back there, that they'll have it again there just because of the needs and the experience.
Thanks,
Beth.
Thanks
for letting me be on the air.
Oh, thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Let's go to Paul from La Crosse. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Yes, last week I read a newspaper story about how things are going in New Orleans, and the general consensus seemed to be in the story that with the new administration, things were going better, that FEMA was getting it, that when people had questions, they were being answered, and there was actually some movement towards making things better in New Orleans. And then last night on the CBS Evening News, there were another story on people still living in trailers, FEMA's not being able to answer questions, decisions aren't being made, things aren't getting better, they're just poking along. So who's got it right? Have things been getting better in the last 6 months, and has FEMA improved in the last 6 months?
Well, I mean, we're on a constant arc of getting better. Like I said, right now, I mean, it's 4 years on. If you want to find physical manifestations of the storm, you still can if you look. And if you want to find people who still fit the notion of displaced, you can. There are individual circumstances that have defied any attempts to get them whole, make them whole again. But I think by and large, we are what we're going to be. Sure, there's still a handful of pockets of people living in trailers. As far as FEMA, I don't even know what their role in it is this far in 4 years. I guess they would have the lingering cases around where people, I mean, there's not that many trailers left around here. Those things seem to be built so shoddily, I'm not sure many would have even lasted 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you spoke to the new administration, President Obama gave our newspaper access to the full cabinet last week for a series of interviews, and certainly in words, seems dedicated to paying attention to what happens here. And what it is, just so there's no misunderstanding, it's not like we're all sitting here with our hands out now saying we don't like some money. The situations that need federal attention and federal funding are what Kathleen was talking about earlier, our wetlands restoration and the levee building, which are, and by all rights, should be federal projects. So that's what we're looking for, just so it's clear that most of us aren't sitting around thinking that we should be still getting, these check cards to Target and Walmart and tax breaks on our taxes and all that sort of stuff. That's not where it's at anymore. When we talk about getting help, it's on a big federal consciousness level that's going to take a certain kind of political will to do.
Does that answer your question, Paul?
Yes, but I mean, so in other words, FEMA, according to the CBS story, FEMA is still involved in everything, and there's still a lot of people in trouble. Did CBS just have it wrong?
I don't know. You know, Paul, not having seen the report, I don't know. And like I said, I guess there are still individual cases happening here, but FEMA is not a phrase you hear thrown around in any large scale right now. I would think they're much more involved in, at this time over at our friends on the other side of the Gulf Coast, over in Galveston and those areas, which seem, boy, if we thought that we were nobody was paying attention to us in 4 years after Katrina, I can imagine what it's like to be in Galveston, because nobody's paid attention that it's the one-year anniversary of the day that Gustav came in and wiped some of the communities over there off the map.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I'm not ducking it. I don't know. Without having seen that report, I'm not sure what it is they were talking about.
Thank you, Paul, for your call. And what about wetland? That was something that we talked about so much, environmental concerns in New Orleans. Has there been work started on wetland restoration and also the levees? Do you feel that they were sufficiently rebuilt to hold, Chris?
Well, the levees question is the same one we asked before Katrina. You know, the levees were there for some 35 years, a lot of those, and they had never been tested, and the first time they were tested, they failed. So here we are. We have a new set. They tell us it's good enough now, and there's only one way we're going to find that out, unfortunately, because it's not something you can test by computer, computer whatever simulation. So we'll find it out when we'll get the next hurricane. As far as the wetlands work, what little is being done is piecemeal. There's no master plan or project in effect at this point. What's happening, to make it listeners understand to some degree, it's we kind of measure it. It's funny how people measure things in America, but they measure it by football fields, and they say that on a daily basis we're losing, I don't know, 6, 10, 20, 100 football fields a day down in the wetlands area. Mm. It's the incursion of the Gulf is coming. There's a number of reasons, and a whole lot of them are man-made. A lot of it's got to do with the channels dug by the oil companies over the years and then later abandoned. But what's happening is the water's coming in. The ground is disappearing, and sooner than later, I'm going to have little lakefront, gulffront property here in New Orleans unless something is done to reverse the process that's happening.
And who would be responsible for that? Is that a federal effort?
It would have to be. It's so massive, right, and so expensive. And then you get down to, you know, obviously a regional problem. Do people in Wisconsin want to pay for our wetlands encroachment? And that comes down, in one way or another, I think it's going to be inevitable that some effort will have to be made, just like I thought after the storm when people actually considered abandoning New Orleans to the elements. The truth is, even if one wanted to do that back then and say nobody returns, New Orleans has to exist. It's the major city at the mouth of the nation's busiest and most important river of commerce. So even if you throw aside things like why should New Orleans and its libertine ways be saved, the fact is you need to have a city here. I think if you look on most maps, you'll see that most countries have a city at the mouth of their most important river. And for good reason, that's to get everything up to you guys in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, something will be done, but as seems to be so much the way of politics and government now, that it will be reactionary to a bigger crisis than we have now. Then it will be any kind of prophylactic measure to keep something from happening.
Mm-hmm. Sue from Monroe. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can.
Okay, great. I'm just wondering, my family and I will be down in New Orleans in November for a wedding, which is on a Saturday evening. We'll have that morning and afternoon to look around the city. What would your guests suggest as the best use of our time, what to see?
The first thing I would suggest is you book more time. that's not enough.
People's schedules.
What do you think you're visiting, Oconto? It takes... Sorry, I spent a couple nights...
We'll hear from somebody in Oconto, too. I've been there many times.
A couple nights there. So... I don't know, in short time, November's such a beautiful time. What I do recommend is you wear your comfortable walking shoes. And,
okay,
you know, just start in the quarter, take in the old city, and if you still got strength in your legs, start walking out towards the Garden District.
Okay.
It's a wonderful place to just wander around in the daytime, and having no plans is sometimes the best plan of all, because something or someone will happen to you that will be unlike an experience you've ever had before, probably.
Well, all righty then. So we should just get down there and enjoy.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Okay. Where's the wedding?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. It's in an older art center. I'm not sure of the name. I'm just not familiar at all. No, but it's my nephew is marrying this woman whose family is from New Orleans, so we'll get all sorts of good food, I'm sure.
Well, welcome to the family.
Thanks, Sue, very much for your call. Our number has been pretty busy, 800-486-8655. And we're speaking with Chris Rose this hour on the Ideas Network. He's a wonderful columnist for the Times-Picayune, and we've spoken with him on and off for the past 4 years since Hurricane Katrina. We go to Mike next from Sheboygan. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I just have a quick observation, then a question, and then I'll take the answer off the air. But, I was there at State Fair Park when the storm refugees came in, you know, right after the storm. I remember getting up really early, going to the bank, and taking out, you know, what I had in savings, which, you know, didn't make a lot at the time. But what I took out, maybe a couple $100, started handing out, you know, money as people came in, people in need. And there were a lot of people doing the exact same thing.
Wow.
And as a testament to... I'm from the South, and we'll live down in Mobile, but I just very gracious people, and a lot of people turned down the help, younger people, too, and turned it down and would point to other people in the crowd saying, I think they're in worse shape than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, it made you feel great at a time when I felt really ashamed, ashamed of my country, the way they were handling that. I'm a former Marine. I've never been so emotional watching the TV and just knowing that good men, you know, needed to go down there to help. But anyways, I just wonder where all those people you know, where they went, you know, that people, like families down in New Orleans talked about all the people in all these different cities that were flown in and just kind of dropped off, like how they fared afterwards. Now, the media here in Milwaukee, or down in Milwaukee, used to, you know, have feel-good stories about, well, here's a New Orleans cook who is starting up a restaurant out this way and things like that, and the community was really interested. I just wonder where those people are now, and I'll take the answer.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the call.
Well, there's the question for the 80s. I think, as what appears, is a whole bunch of them found their home, either by the long route or the short route. But like I said, we seem to have repopulated so many of our neighborhoods and so much of the city. A lot of folks found better ways of life. I've done stories on folks as far as way as Salt Lake City, where I went to study what I thought would be the city in America least like New Orleans, to talk to people. And some just found a better way of life. Like, there is actually a famous cook who settled in Milwaukee and has decided to stay. So there are those kinds of stories. I think for a lot of folks, they had never left New Orleans. It's a very parochial town. And a lot of folks didn't realize there was a life out there in the rest of the country. And for many, they found a better way, a place they liked better, a place that maybe made more sense or was safer or was cleaner. And all of those are reasonable decisions. But I think 40 years in, we're close to the equilibrium that we're supposed to be at, I guess.
And is it because you just sort of lose your memory or you lose your concern 4 years after this major event, Chris, that we're not focusing as much on New Orleans? Or is it doing well enough that we don't need to focus our attention?
Like I said, I would point to Galveston. If I were to clamor for more attention, you'd have to look at Galveston, which is where we were 3 years ago. And that's not a good place. It was very, very difficult. So I would say I'd hate to ever focus anybody's attention away from here, particularly if they wanted to come do service work. Yeah, we still got a lot of, you know, rebuilding, hands-on stuff to be done. The story that fellow told about going and getting his money and giving it out, it's so stirring.
Right.
So stirring to hear what so many people did in those days after the storm. And again, who will never be able to step up and be thanked. It was all these acts of anonymity, of great charitable neighborliness. And I think we've been as big a beneficiary of that as anybody in American history. And I think to some degree, maybe the best way to pay attention to New Orleans is just to come visit us. I think after a while, we got tired of wearing the mantlehood of victimhood. I guess it served us well early on because we felt that way and we were in many ways victimized. But I think now what we'd like to say is just don't forget we're open for business.
Mike is next from Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I just got back from New Orleans, and we just happened to be there the week before Katrina. And it was real impressive to see the gusto of the folks there. The big slogan that we saw on a lot of the T-shirts was, "I survived FEMA." Yeah, exactly. It just shows that you can't take good people down.
There you go. And we've heard a lot of explanations for what the acronym FEMA stands for, and none of them are appropriate, even for public radio.
Absolutely right. I have to say they're the most fun people that I have ever met, and I look forward to being back and spending much more time with them again.
Ah, that's wonderful. You know, I don't know what it is, but this is the absolute truth, and I've told a lot of people here this, because I go to Wisconsin a lot. That's not where I grew up, of course. It's just where I went to school. But I have great affiliation there, and I go back as often as possible. But I swear there's something about the two ends of the Mississippi River that the folks in Wisconsin are more like the folks in southern Louisiana than anywhere else I know in the country. Now, it may just be because they're the only two places in the country that if you're walking down the street on a Sunday morning drinking a beer, you're not only castigated for your behavior, but you're congratulated for helping the local economy. So I don't know what it is about the two places, but I just want to pass along that we think the folks up there are pretty terrific too. I'd love to take all my friends down here up to where the places I go in Wisconsin from time to time.
Yeah,
I think they'd understand.
Thanks, Chris. More phone calls in a moment. Chris Rose, our guest. August 29, the fourth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and we're asking how are things going in that town. Chris has written movingly about New Orleans following the Hurricane Katrina in 2005. He's the author of One Dead in Attic. In case you haven't seen that, it's a collection of incredibly moving, well, the cover is worth the book, incredibly moving stories about people trying to deal with the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. One line is open. If you'd like to send an email, that address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After the news from National Public Radio at 10 o'clock, we continue our Tuesday programs on health care reform. So join us for that. Back to phone calls for Chris, Debbie from Whitewater. Hi, Debbie.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I was in New Orleans 2 months after the hurricane. I went down to do some animal-related rescue work, and the people of New Orleans were just fantastic to us. We had taken over Lake Castle School on the south end of Lake Pontchartrain is kind of an emergency animal shelter, and, you know, as we were out walking animals and scrubbing out crates and that kind of thing, people would drive by and just hand us money, and these were people who had lost everything.
Oh.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to know that on our end it worked that way, too, because, like I said, the whole story that comes up every time I come on Kathleen's show and so many other places is this is a story of people helping each other. It's hours like these on the radio that make me feel good about going back out there and doing the work I do, because it's very heartfelt, and it's the kind of stuff that you just don't hear about on a daily basis, that we forget about, how willing people are to help each other, people that don't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful experience, and Chris, I'm a big fan of your column, so keep writing.
Yeah, he's a heck of a writer. And, you know, the other thing, Debbie, is those, it showed that whole experience how much dogs and cats are lifelines for us, that people really needed them and needed to stay until they were able to find a place, an airplane that would take them. Or I was really moved by those stories in those days.
It was a real terrible situation. And, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of the folks that left their animals behind. And people say, you know, well, gee, I would never do that. How could they do that? But truthfully, unless you were there, you just did not understand, you know, the few choices that these people had. And the experiences that they'd had in the past were basically they were only gone for a day or two, and they could leave food and water out and come back, and the animals would be fine.
Right.
This was just a very, very different situation.
Yeah, it sure was. You adopt.
Right, well, that was the case. I mean, historically, that's what everybody's always been able to do, is leave a day's worth of food out, and everything will be fine. I remember when I came back in, many of the things I'd been asked to do by friends who had reached me was to get in their houses by any means necessary and try to find and rescue their animals.
And you adopted a dog during that time, Luna Biscuit. Isn't that the name? Yeah.
That is. I call that, that's French for moon pie, but it's not really. Yeah, she was, the odd thing is, I guess we sort of reached across the state. Remember, 3 weeks after Katrina, a lesser known but equally devastating storm named Rita came in and basically took out what was left of the Louisiana coastline at southwest Louisiana. The coastal parishes were just eviscerated by that storm, and we ended up adopting a dog that ended up at one of the shelters out in Lafayette, Louisiana. We did indeed.
Yeah, and is Luna Biscuit still with you?
Luna Biscuit is still with us.
All right. I'm glad to hear that. Thanks, Debbie, very much for the call. Let's go next to Al from Bayfield. Hi, Al.
Yeah, good morning. I'm going to be going down to New Orleans first week in November with Elder Hostel to do a project with Habitat for Humanity called Rebuilding New Orleans. And I'm wondering how extensive is that work still is it still in the downtown area or the Ninth Ward, or where are they doing that?
Well, a lot of that would be the Ninth Ward for sure, both the upper and lower Ninth Ward, sort of an area divided by an industrial canal. But yeah, the most of the rehabilitation work is not going on in downtown. There are the occasional schools and public buildings that still lie dormant that people are going into and working in, but for the most part, most of the service work done by out of towners is out more in some of the outlying neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just one other quick question. Time magazine had a short reference a couple weeks ago to a new DVD called Trouble the Water.
Right.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, that's a nominee for an Academy Award. Right. I don't know if it won it or not. It was as a documentary.
Yeah, is that out for general circulation now?
I think so. I would think it probably is by now, unless did you say you heard about HBO? One of the premier channels currently owns the rights to it, but it was made originally on some amateur video, and then it amped up into professional grade by some to live down in the lower Ninth Ward and basically filmed their own experience. I've heard it's quite riveting. They have actually, obviously, some of the first and most visceral on-hand footage of the water coming in and taking out that whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call, Al. Our number 800-486-8655, and let's go next to Jan from Milwaukee. Hi, Jan.
Hello. I just wanted to...
Hello.
I just wanted to give a shout-out to two of my favorite businesses in New Orleans, because I know if people don't go there, they're going to go away. And that is Café Du Monde, of course. And I hope this place is still there. It's called Mother's on the corner of Chapatula and Poydras.
Oh, sure. I think you picked two businesses that have no fear of going away.
Oh,
they're good and busy. But to the woman who was listening earlier, those are two good suggestions for what to do with your time. Go to Mother's and get a roast beef po' boy with debris on it. Debris is all the stuff you scrape out of the bottom of that gravy pan. And Café Du Monde, of course, is the home of the French beignet, which is a French fried donut covered with powdered sugar. The joy of which is to blow on your neighbor.
They're so light, if you don't hold them down, they'll float away. And at Mother's, my sandwich is a Ralph, which does have debris, but it also has ham and cheese and cabbage and everything on it. It's amazing. So
there you go.
Thanks, Jan.
Thanks.
Yeah, Luke from Madison. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Luke.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just have a real quick question and a comment about Brad Pitt. I know that he was down there making some eco-friendly houses. And my question really is what's the impact of these houses? Like, how many of them are there? Are they still in construction? And is he going to be the mayor of New Orleans?
Despite a very vigorous effort to get Brad Pitt to run, it's you see a lot of shirts and signs, Brad Pitt for mayor. He is a part-time resident here, but for those who would want him to run and match some of his actor colleagues as politicians, you have to live in New Orleans for 5 years prior to running for mayor.
Oh.
And you have to have a New Orleans driver's license, and he has neither, but he has been a great citizen here. He's bought and refurbished a nice mansion in the French Quarter and has unloaded a great deal of money and even more than that attention into eco-friendly housing that they built down in the lower Ninth Ward in the neighborhoods that were eviscerated the hardest. If you go down there, you will see some remarkable pieces of architecture, self-sustaining houses, and I guess they've got about a dozen or two dozen built at this point. But they're underway for several dozen more. It's a pretty large scale project, and I think we'll keep going as funding keeps coming in. But Brad Pitt, man, he's done a lot for us. We're just waiting for Angelina Jolie to adopt a baby from New Orleans that will certify our third world class, and then we can apply for federal aid.
Thank you so much, Luke, for the call.
We love Brad Pitt.
How's the current mayor doing? I hear Nagin's approval ratings are pretty low.
There's nothing I can say about our current mayor that is suitable for radio.
Really?
It's gone beyond being humorous, beyond being embarrassing, to being extremely hurtful to the city's reputation.
Mm.
And just, you know, you want to talk about a lame duck. There's just nothing happening. Mm. As far as City Hall goes, and there hasn't been for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Now
would come the question, why did we reelect him in the middle of
it? Well, yeah, that was coming.
You know, I don't know. I don't know who does this stuff. You know, we got William Jefferson just convicted. He was, you know, I don't know who pulls those buttons. I look around into the eyes of the people I live with around here, and I guess they hold secrets that... but I'll never know. But our mayor, everybody's just waiting until he's out of office next spring so we can really get something going on a civic level here.
How about schools? I've heard reports, school is probably in session, maybe starting today or a little bit earlier, that the schools are really improving. They were rebuilt. There are more charter schools, interesting schools that have opened in the city. What's the state of education? Better?
Much. And now we started school. You want to hear? We started school on August 14th.
Ah.
We're not like you guys. We don't sit around all of August doing nothing, but we get out earlier, I think. And I think they factor in a couple, like you guys factor in snow days. We factor in that there always might be a couple days that hurricanes might shut us down.
Right.
But the greatest piece of destruction that Katrina wrought upon the city of New Orleans was it destroyed our school board. It left it in shambles, and it was never able to piece itself together quite rightly. And during that time, a great number of schools were chartered out, and another recovery district was made for the schools in most crisis. And I don't know how to measure the progress of the public schools, other than to tell you this from my own gut and my own honest accord. Before Katrina, my children were in a public school. They were in one of two public schools that I would send my children to in the city of New Orleans. And if we weren't going to one of those, then I'd bite the bullet like everyone else. I could tell you now unfailingly that there are at least a dozen or more schools where I would trust my children to go now. What's happened in these areas is the neighborhoods and the parents have finally been given the freedom to get in and... get out of the old ways of funding, which all of New Orleans public school funding was eaten up in middle management. And finally, you know, money and supplies and things are getting to the children, and the parents are in the schools running the show rather than administrators. And it's a great thing to watch.
I'm sure it must be.
For each school that we have functioning in that regard, you know, that's 300 or 400 more kids from New Orleans who have a shot.
Right. Guy from Merrill. Hi, Guy.
Hi, how you doing? I listening to your program, I spent 3 months down in New Orleans after the storm. I'm a construction electrician by trade. Me and some friends went down there to work, and we actually went down there with not really a plan and ended up in a FEMA camp in St. Bernard Parish. Three giant tents, and I'll tell you what, we were well taken care of. I was fortunate enough to go down the year before when my wife and kids were on a vacation. We ended up down in New Orleans. We spent 3 days. We were supposed to spend one. We loved it so much that we spent an extra couple days. Headed back north, and then just so happens, you know, Katrina came along. Well, I was able to go back down and retrace some of my steps from down there the previous year, and it was unbelievable, the devastation that one person, you know, I mean, what you saw down there, the Gulf Shore, you know, Gulfport, Mississippi, and New Orleans. But I'll tell you what, working with them people down there, we worked with the local hands in an oil refinery. We're off of Canal Street, an old building that they started back up on construction. Them guys, you talking to them, it was like, you know, here at Katrina, it just happened, and these people had lost everything, their homes, their cars, their animals. Some of them lost their parents, grandparents, and they were just their spirit. It was just like, we'll move on, we'll get on with it, and rebuild, and everything's going to be okay. I couldn't understand where they were coming. Yeah, it was hard to fathom, you know, the way they, you know, nobody really sat around and said, oh, you know, woe is me.
Mm-hmm.
And the people we dealt with was just fantastic. They treated us like gold.
And you treated them like gold as well. Chris?
Yes.
We have about 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Well, I think that last caller summed it up. Yeah, I've been amazed by the resilience of the human spirit here, but I've also realized, you know, after looking at it, what choice did we have? We did what anybody would do, what any community would do, is if you believe in a place and you love a place and you're willing to fight for it, you dust off and you jump back in. And to borrow a phrase from our great writer, Tennessee Williams, thanks to the kindness of strangers, we were able to do that.
Right. Thanks to the kindness of strangers. Chris, thank you so much for being with us. A real pleasure as always. Chris Rose, you can read, if you go to Times Picayune website, you can read about New Orleans, which he's been covering for a long time now. So thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Rob Schroeder for producing the hour as well. And thanks also to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for listening, everybody. We have news coming up, and we'll return with another hour of conversation about healthcare this time, so please stay with us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.